The car screeches to a stop, bidding goodbye to my hopes of a discreet arrival. Heads huddled around the door turn to look. I should have known the crowd would be spilling out of the church. My mother was the proprietor of Parles, the village shop and pub, the village hub. It was always going to be a big funeral. The years peel away, and I'm instantly laid bare. But the driver is out of the car, taking my suitcase from the trunk, opening my door, saying, "Here we are, so," in his strong Wexford accent. I will do this well. The vow that seemed so potent yesterday in my apartment in San Francisco feels puny now. Doing it well doesn't necessarily mean going into that church, does it? I'm so late. Wouldn't it be more discreet to shrink back into the seat and wait it out, catch Maeve later on her way home? Or even better, go back into Wexford town. Lie low for today, return tomorrow, when all the fuss is over. "Catch yourself on," I admonish myself in the local lingo. "You're not an oversensitive child now. You're a 38-year-old woman, a magazine writer, an apartment owner, a car driver. Get in there." As I psych myself, I'm putting on my sunglasses to protect me from the staring eyes. I'm taking out the clasp to let my hair fall forward, a veil of sorts. I'm taking a breath so deep it hurts. And yes, I'm stepping out of the car onto Mucknamore soil for the first time in 20 years. The heat is unseasonably sultry. Surely Ireland is never this hot? The air feels thick, hardly like air at all, and the nausea that's been plaguing me all the way down here growls again. I walk through the open gates of the little churchyard. Here I am, folks, the entertainment of the day, the happening that you'll pass one to the other whenever Mrs. D's funeral is recalled. As I fix my stare beyond their curious eyes, it collides with the door of the black hearse, open like a mouth. It draws me toward it, inexorable. I draw nearer. People begin to recognize that it's me. One voice says, "Hello, Joe. Welcome home." Another, "Sorry for your trouble." Then there is a general murmur of greeting and sympathy. I nod acknowledgement. "Yes, Joe, welcome home," says another man, turning the greeting to a snigger. I know his face, one of the Kennedys who always used to mock me from his high stool at our bar counter. At the door, they part to let me through, and I walk towards words I haven't heard for a long, long time. "Giving thanks to you, His Almighty Father, He broke the bread." The priest is as bald as a Buddhist, a big man, a performer, wallowing in emphasis and pauses. "Gave it to His disciples and said." Two other clerics in purple robes stand behind him, and the congregation is on its knees, heads bowed. It is the consecration, the holiest part of the Mass, the quietest part of the Mass, which makes the click of my heels on the tiles sound louder than it should. People turn and nudge each other, loosening the holy silence. As whispers begin to swirl in my wake, Father Performer senses the loss of his audience and looks up. Seeing me, his eyes narrow, two specks of stone. Again, I'm gripped by the urge to flee, but the pull of my mother's coffin sitting there on the trolley between us, all polished wood and burnished trimmings, is stronger. It is covered in glossy flowers. Funeral flowers, grown to be cut, already dying. I walk on. The priest stops the ceremony and stands with his hands together in the prayer position, a column of forbearance. The other two clerics behind him imitate the pose, censoring me with that loaded, condescending silence they must get taught at religious school. I am almost at the top pew where my family is sitting. I can see Maeve now, looking thin, too thin, almost gaunt. She follows the eyes of the priest, turns to see what's causing the disruption, and when she finds it is me, pure exasperation breaks across her face. "Now, Joe," it says,